Okay, so welcome everyone to the July 29th, 2020 9/11 and other deep state crimes teleconference call. And Craig, are you ready for the role now?
Not quite. My computer is going very slowly as always, but okay, now I'm a few seconds away here from
from
doing the role.
We have an anonymous person here. I don't know how we know who that is. Okay.
Is it me?
I don't know. I think once we do the roll call, if your name hasn't been called, then you would be the one coming in as anonymous. So just let us know when we're done with the roll.
Oh, yeah. I'm ready to roll here, Cheryl.
Okay. Take it away.
Okay, so far we do have somebody who's anonymous. So we had that last time too, and then it turned out we figured out who it was. Do you remember that?
Once you go through the role, yeah, they can just identify themselves.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. Okay, so we have Ann Hendricks, we have Barbara Honegger, Barry Zwicker, Cheryl Curtis, Craig McKee, Fern Tishman, John O'Malley, Carl Golovin, Lynn Cornelison, Marty Hopper, Pat O'Connell, Peter Ketchum, Richard Gage, Steve Stadola, and Xander Arena. So somebody else just joined us, which I have to go back to the first page. Oh, David Rold. Okay, great. So did I miss anyone else?
Yeah, Craig,
this
Sheila.
Okay, so you're under anonymous. That was it. It was you last month, too, that came in as anonymous. So we got to fix that. Okay. Great. Okay, so it's Sheila. So anybody else not hear their name?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Gregory Longo is here on my phone call. So.
Okay.
Okay.
Great. Great. So, so that's the role.
That takes care of it. Okay, great. So let's move on then. The minutes. Okay, so Craig and I are really behind on the minutes, but you should have the June minutes within the hour, and we'll vote on them to approve them next month. And I want a big thanks to Anne for saying she would start taking the minutes as we move forward again for a little bit. And we really appreciate that, Anne, where we're desperate without you. And the other past 2 months, I guess it would be April and May, we will get out to you definitely before the next call. So that's where we're at with those. Okay, and then for the agenda, are there any objections to the agenda as written and published? Oh, hearing none, then they're approved. And let's get started with Richard Gage is joining us to tell us about the anniversary events. Richard, always a pleasure. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you, Cheryl, and hi, everybody. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I'm going to put it on
Lecture mode?
Lecture mode, yeah.
Let me see. Okay, so we have to unmute Richard, of course. Where is he? Okay. Okay, so we should be good. Cheryl, you there? Not sure what. Richard, are you there?
I am. I was muted myself. So now Richard Gage is unmuted and we're good. Okay. Go ahead, Richard.
Hello, everybody. So AE 9/11 Truth is going to be sponsoring an online virtual conference this September. And we've got some speakers I wanted to share with you about. So on Friday, September 11th, we start in the evening Eastern time, 6 p.m. Eastern. I'll give a presentation of where we've been, where we are, and where we're going.
Richard, Richard, sorry to interrupt you. I apologize. You're not coming in great. Like you're sort of barely adequate, but maybe you could. Well, it's an improvement. maybe something between that and what you were. Well, just you're maybe speaking in a somewhat subdued way. Maybe just bring it from a 6 to an 8 or something.
Sure. Okay. Thanks. Thanks, Craig.
Great.
I will be giving a kind of an honest assessment of how we what we've done over the last 14 years for us and 19 years altogether, and a kind of a vision of where we want to be when we head into and as a result of 2020. So that will be happening the first hour, and I will then introduce Matt Campbell, who's a UK supporter who lost his brother Jeff in the North Tower, and he has been about trying to get a new inquest into his brother's death based on the evidence for explosive demolition. Matt will be we have spent hours putting together, including 2 hours on the phone with his attorney in the UK, putting together an inquest petition with all of our evidence, and the attorney is now working on that. By September 11th, he will have submitted that. So we're going to be engaged in a fundraising, yet another legal fundraising endeavor to fund this, and that'll start in a couple of weeks. And by September 11th, we will have submitted that. So that's going to be expensive, putting the dollars together for this $500 an hour attorney, who's really good, by the way. He is on board, and the follow up legal work that has to happen when the Attorney General either accepts or dismisses the inquest petition. So Matt will be talking all about that in the second hour at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, Friday, September 11th. The third hour will be Dylan Avery, and he'll be talking about his experiences in the movement as well as creating this new film called Seven, which is about Building Seven, of course, which will be completed by then, and he will be showing some extended clips, although we don't think we can show the whole film as it is. It's expected to be 45 minutes due to what is expected to be the terms of our anticipated legal agreement with the distribution company, who's very excited about picking up this film, getting it out on DVD, and getting it out on Netflix as well. So none of that's for sure, but all of it's anticipated. That's Friday. Then Saturday, September 12th, we start at 3 in the afternoon Eastern Time with an update on the request for correction, which we've submitted to NIST. And by then, they will have responded to these problems that they face now with this 100-page request for correction, which you can do under the Data Quality Act with agencies under the federal government. So Mick Harrison will be joining us there, and Tony Zambodi and Ted Walter. So that's the first hour, and we also, in the second hour, we go into the actual evidence, the basics, which will include Roland Angle talking about World Trade Center 7 and focusing on the Halsey report, and myself on the Twin Towers. And then the third hour, we have a real special event where we have cajoled David Ray Griffin and Stephen Jones and Neil Harrod on the stage together, each for 20 minutes, and then questions and answers for them. So we haven't heard from David Ray Griffin, of course, for a long, long time, and Stephen Jones also. So we're all very excited about that. They will be giving their retrospective feelings about having been in the 9/11 truth movement and grandfatherly advice about what we should be doing So we're all really looking forward to that. So that's Saturday, September 12th, ending at 6 p.m. Eastern. Now, on Sunday, we start again at 6 p.m. Eastern, evening time, with Daniel Genzer. And, of course, he has written a book now, and I don't have the name of it in front of me, but he will be talking about the false flag operations of and since 9/11 and the wars we've gotten into and exposing all those links. And then we go to John Whitehead of the Rutherford Institute, who is also on board with 9/11 Truth and very aware of what's going on with it. He will be talking about the surveillance and the police state changes in our society since 9/11, the militarization of the police. And then we've got at 8 p.m. Sunday, we've got James Corbett, 8 p.m. Eastern. So he will be talking about the internet censorship on and after 9/11. So that completes our three-day virtual conference with those speakers. It is expected to be free to all, and we'll be asking for donations during the proceeds. So how's that?
That's great, Richard. Let me put it into Q&A mode now. If anyone would like to ask Richard a question, just let me get it there. So, Richard, while we're waiting for anyone else to get in the queue, I wanted to ask you, how will people access this? Will it be at the AE website, or is there a special website for it? And I think you're muted now. Let's see. Craig, are you able to unmute Richard? I'll unmute him here. I got him. Okay, sorry, Richard. Did you hear my question? Yeah, okay, So how will people be able to access it?
On our website. We'll send out all kinds of emails. So
okay.
It won't be a mystery.
Okay, great.
And I think it'll be live streamed to YouTube as well.
Oh, that's great. Okay.
Yeah.
Live stream to YouTube. Okay. Does anyone else have a question or a comment if you push star 6? For Richard? I love you. You have a great lineup, Richard. This sounds really, really great. So I can't wait to hear it. Okay, well, I don't see any other questions.
I could throw, it's not really a question, it's more of a comment. Richard, one thing that obviously strikes, there's a lot of really great names that you've listed. Two that sort of are intriguing are two people that we haven't heard a lot from in terms of live appearances at conferences in some time. So it's more of a comment, and maybe you want to comment on it, which is the two people I'm thinking of is, of course, David Ray Griffin and Stephen Jones. I don't think Stephen's been publicly in some time, and certainly David Ray Griffin continues to write books, but I haven't heard him sort of make a conference appearance in some time. So these are kind of coups, I think.
Yeah, and then we also have a lot of people with questions, too, that I just noticed. So, okay.
And I called them both and talked to them, and they were just delightful and gracious about this. I had to kind of cajole them into, not receding into obscurity, which I think was their preference.
Right. Well, that's great.
Okay, so let's move on then. We have Carl Golovin. Carl, go ahead.
Hi, Richard. Carl Golovin.
Hello.
Hi. One sort of comment or suggestion and one question. The comment, if presuming NIST is not going to respond favorably or usefully, have you considered formally approaching the Inspector General for the Commerce Department and formally complaining so that, yeah, they would actually have to formally investigate and respond? And the other idea, I mentioned once to you John Rappaport, nomorefakenews.com, as a valuable resource on COVID-19 and all aspects of that. But historically, I think he was in the right position concerning 9/11, and his analysis might be helpful in a presentation at some point. Just wondering if you've ever been able to make contact with John Rappaport.
I haven't personally, Carl, but I do believe, and I can't remember specifically, but I'm almost 99% sure that he is on board with 9/11. I haven't contacted him. I should. I'm in agreement. How about this? I will, because I do have his contact information. I mean, an email. I don't know where I got it, but I believe I do have it. He's great. I've read his stuff on COVID, and he just breaks right through. It's awesome. And regarding NIST and going to the Inspector General, that would be certainly one of the available methods of appeal that we have to us. There is also a lawsuit opportunity as well. So Ted's more on top of it than I am. But he's
very good.
So,
thank you. I don't think the two would be mutually exclusive, that even the IG route could even be pursued now, just so they're on board as things unfold.
Sure. I would wait personally. But we can send them the request for correction, letting them know that an agency under their view would be available. Hi, somebody join us.
Yeah, they're okay, on mute, Richard, so they can't see anything. Yeah.
Do you want to log in?
Thank you, Richard.
Thanks, Carl.
Okay, great. Next is Marty Hopper. Marty, go ahead.
Hey, Marty.
Yeah, hey, Richard, how are you?
Good.
Well, first of all, this lineup sounds fantastic, so I'm very excited about it. So,
good.
Thanks in advance for putting that together. And my question is very simple. I just didn't quite catch the Sunday evening, Sunday afternoon, the first two speakers. So I was just wondering if you could go. It was Daniel or Danielle.
Daniel Ganser. They call him Daniela in Switzerland, Daniela, but it's a boy, and he's one of the most sought after 9/11 speakers in Europe, the most, very very top guy. He did a TED talk. In fact, maybe you, Craig, you could send out the TED talk that he did in English. It is superb.
Okay, excellent.
Yeah, I could include that. Yeah, for sure.
Awesome. And then the Sunday after him is John Whitehead of the Rutherford Institute. He's a specialist on the militarization of police following 9/11.
Hey, John was on our call just a few months ago. So he's great. Yeah.
Yeah. Constitutional attorney.
Excellent.
Rutherford.org, I think it is, or RutherfordInstitute.org.
Okay, Rutherford Institute. And then finally, who was the person that you just said had that the last call, the questioner, the person on the call asked you to contact, and you said he's you would do that, and he has good work on COVID?
John Rappaport.
John Rappaport. Okay, excellent. Okay, that was it. Just didn't catch all those. So wonderful. Really looking forward to your event. Sounds great.
Cool. Thank you.
Okay. Next is, whoops. Barry, you're next.
Yeah. Hi, Richard. It's great to hear you in the flesh. And also, this is a tremendous agenda for this weekend. Congratulations on that. We know how much
Thank
work
you.
Goes into it.
Thank
yeah,
you, Barry.
So my question is just very run-of-the-mill. I just missed who is the first person on Saturday, September 12th. I heard something like Rex Tillerson. I didn't catch who it is.
Rex, oh, that'd be interesting. this is about our request for correction, and Ted Walter will be moderating with Tony Zambodi and Mick Harrison from the Lawyers Committee for the 9/11 Inquiry. And they'll also be talking about some of the other work that Lawyers Committee is involved in, such as the connection, which is a very powerful connection, of course, between between anthrax and 9/11.
Yep, yep. And Graham McQueen did a tremendous book on the anthrax connection.
Yes, and there's additional work that had to be done there, and Barbara has covered that quite well in a recent presentation. Was that in Zurich, Barbara, or was that afterward? Oh, she's on mute. You can ask her about that.
I can unmute her here. Hang on a second. Okay,
Richard,
Barbara, you're unmuted.
Yeah, what was your question, Richard? I wasn't quite clear on it.
The connection between anthrax and 9/11. Did you cover that in Zurich? And do you want to let people know where they can learn more about that?
No. I'll send it to Craig and Cheryl to post. No, that was my op-ed news article way back in, I think, 2008. Op-ed News is a major alternative online news source, and it's still up on the web. That was back in 2008, and I've been on many radio programs, including recently your own 9/11 Free Fall with Andy Steele on this. Most people think, including in Graham's book, he doesn't touch this, which is kind of surprising, but there are many links to threats of, reports of, et cetera, of anthrax on the day of 9/11 itself, including, of course, many people know Jerome Hauer, who's a major suspect as the actual perpetrator, one of the actual perpetrators, inside perpetrators, put the Bush-Cheney White House and its staff on anti-anthrax Cipro on 9/11 itself. I published this 12 years ago over. And so I'll send a link to that article. And Andy Steele unearthed it only about in the last few weeks. And so I was on 9/11 Free Fall. I'll send a link to that too.
Perfect. Thanks, Barb.
Yeah.
Okay. And Ann Hendricks, if you would push *6 again, I mistakenly knocked you off the list of questions. So if you could do that again, and then I'll get you on here. Barbara, you're next. So I don't know if you have anything else you want to say or. Barbara Honegger?
Oh, I'm sorry. You're still with me. I just wanted to know, is the 3 hours, Richard, for each of the 3 days of the conference, is that a definite deadline or maximum? Or if it goes over, if something, really important happen, can it go over, or is it just 3 hours each day?
Well, I don't know that yet.
Okay.
We don't have an impending... an imposing deadline on the back end, if that's what you mean.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah. So in other words, if there was reason to extend a bit, you could. Okay.
It's possible. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Barbara. Okay. Next is Ann Hendricks. Ann, go ahead.
Hi, Richard. This is Ann Hendricks. How are you doing? I have
Good.
A couple of funny questions for you. Well, first of all, it's a fantastic lineup. Oh, gosh, we are all going to be attending. It's just awesome. Thank you. The second question is, who did the cool, clever photograph photo of the TV anchor, the TVs, recent story that you had an article on Graham McQueen's Ted Walter's research on the TV anchors mentioning explosives, and the photograph that they headed the article was a bunch of TVs and a little girl watching it, and the words. Do you know who did that? Who put that together?
That would be our graphics, head graphics guy, Jeff Long, who helps with our website and our graphics.
Jeff Long. Okay. That was.
Yeah, he's from the D.C. area.
That
originally.
Was clever. Okay. And yeah. The last question. I have a book by Chuck Baldwin. Actually, I got an extra copy for you if you would like it. It is The Freedom Documents.
I'd be honored. The pastor, Chuck Baldwin.
Yeah, it's called The Freedom Documents.
He's one of the few, I'll just make a quick comment. He's one of the few Christian pastors who really knows what's going on and is willing to talk about it. The rest of them, almost all of them, have sold out.
Yeah.
So I'd be honored to have anything that you have of his. He's in Montana, which I am nearby most of the time now, as some of you know.
Mm-hmm.
In Idaho.
Yeah, it's a couple hundred pages of freedom documents, civil liberties, and yeah, fighting for freedom. So I thought it could be useful for all kinds of things. So sure, I'll send it to you. That's all, and best
Thank
wishes.
You. Thank you, Anne.
Okay, thanks, Anne. Next is Xander Arena. Xander, go ahead.
I know Xander. Xander volunteers with us. He's one of our key volunteers. Runs the verification meeting, and he's involved in dust testing, which we cannot talk about tonight.
We cannot
All right.
talk about that yet. All right. So, Richard, just a question. You used the language that Stephen Neils and David Ray would be taking the stage. Is there going to be an actual room where these folks are together, or is it completely virtual?
No, it's completely virtual.
Understood. And is there a way that we might promote the event on other social media channels, YouTube channels, things like that? Maybe get some.
Yeah, there's got to be lots and lots and lots of ways. And this is not my area of expertise, but we're going to try and get this out everywhere in every way we can. And we need lots of help doing it. So I don't have the marketing program outline yet. But anybody who's got something to add that might help, I'd be grateful.
All right. I'm in that fight with you then. Okay. Thanks.
Hey. Thanks, Xander. Awesome to hear
you. Okay. Thank you, Xander. Next is Sheila Casey. Sheila, go ahead.
Hi, Richard. I would really like to ask David Ray Griffin some questions about global warming because I disagree with him on his conclusions. And I was just wondering if we are going to be confined to just 9/11 topics, or would other topics be open to discussion?
I think a whole lot of us do have some opposition, and a whole lot of us have allegiance to his position on that. And I think it's going to tear us apart if we start getting into that. Or the Pentagon, you know, which is quite controversial, as you guys know, most of all. But, you know, David is kind of on one side of that issue, and others are on other sides. So let's not go there. Can I prevail upon you and everybody to be gentle? Because we don't want these guys to disappear or to be confronted. I mean, it's not a valid topic, but it is not a valid topic for this particular conference venue in particular, because it's an AE 9/11 Truth event, and we are focusing on, as much as possible, 9/11 and specifically the Twin Towers and Building 7, although we are varying from that with some of these special speakers. Does that help?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, you're saying, well, we've got certain speakers that can veer off topic, but maybe not into global warming. I'm not sure I really understand that, but what topics do you think are okay?
Well, global warming is not a topic that stems from 9/11. It has other roots and causes and agendas that come from some of the same powers.
Perpetrators.
But you know, I know many 9/11 truthers who are with him on that subject, and some of them are probably here. So, you know, do we want to start that here? Well, why would we start that over in a 9/11 conference, you know, if you're not going to have that conversation here? It's because we want controls on some of the conversation so that we can be productive with our plow forward. And I don't think that's going to be as productive as you might hope it should be.
So what, you think COVID discussions would be permissible? It sounds like you would be getting John Rappaport on board for that, because what he's focusing on recently.
No, I wouldn't be. We don't have John Rappaport lined up for this. That was just brought up by Carl as an alternative somebody to get our message to and out from.
Oh, okay. So, help with the 9/11 message.
Nevertheless, yeah. But nevertheless, we have COVID is what's happening right now. It's like in our face, you know, a whole lot more than climate change. They seem to have shifted their focus. So it's literally in our face. It's on our face. We've got to deal with it, but we're not going to have a topic, a whole topic of an hour dealing with it. It'll be referenced in these various sections, particularly by these three guest speakers on Saturday night.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, my honest reaction to that is that I'm not sure. I feel like I already really understand what happened on 9/11. I don't know that there's that much more that I can learn about it.
I think that's a fair comment, Sheila, and I feel that way many, many, many days and many weeks out of the months and many months out of the years. So many hours out of some of these days. But it is the topic that if we can get it past the censorship and dent the wall of denial in this society, that it, I think, even above COVID and mandatory vaccines, will be the issue that begins to knock a whole lot of dominoes over for a whole lot of people. So that's why we've chosen to remain active after 13 years, even though my message, as you know, hasn't changed in about 10 years.
Yeah.
Right? We
right.
have the same message, and maybe that's why I'm not giving a whole lot of presentations around the country, other than the fact that there's everything's closed up. You can't get into a group of – you can't form a conference these days, physically even. So,
well, if we're confined to discussing 9/11, then I'm wondering kind of what's in it for me who already feels like I understand 9/11. Am I going to learn something?
Well, certainly on Saturday night you will. Those folks are using 9/11 as a launch point to talk about what happened after 9/11 in these three different sectors.
And who were those three people again? Would you mind reiterating?
Intellectually fascinating. We've got Daniela Ganser from Zurich. We've got John Whitehead from the Rutherford Institute, constitutional attorney, and talking about militarization of the police, which is interesting right now because now it's the militarization of the police that actually Antifa is after, and it's the militarization of Antifa, and they're being used by the Soros crowd that's going to be an important question, series of questions for John Whitehead, because now there's patriots around the country who are standing up for the police who are under besiege and being defunded as a result of this agenda against against the police and authority and our historical icons and iconography in this country. It's all under attack because it's really a Marxist invasion that is occurring here, and most of these Antifa characters are paid actors. So it's a fascinating juxtaposition with this issue of militarization of police, which of course, with along with surveillance, has been an issue. So Antifa does have something to talk about here.
Yeah,
but there's just a whole lot more on the table. It's very complex.
Yeah, well, my view on that is that we're going to be wishing we had our domestic police force back once they bring in the UN police force.
Yeah, really. And that's what that's where they're heading with it. And they've
well,
already
yeah, because they want to
the UN.
It's
yeah, the UN has already had an assessment and some kind of proclamation about the use of federal forces in Portland and other places, and it's like get the hell out of our country, you know. That's my personal attitude here, and so now I'm in this strange position of having to protect the federal police that are protecting our culture and our federal buildings, and yet it's the feds who, through the Bush administration, you know, were at least partially involved in the setup of the cover-up of 9/11, i.e. the FBI, the CIA, probably the NSA too back then. I'm not sure.
Okay, Sheila, are you
great.
Okay
thank
if we
you.
Move on? We've got a few more
yeah,
questions.
Yeah, yeah, I'm good. Thank you. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Sheila. Great okay. discussion.
Okay, Carl Golovin, you're next. And then we have one more, Charles Ewing, you'll be after Carl. Carl, go ahead. Carl?
Sorry, I muted myself.
Okay.
Richard, back in 2008, during the Ron Paul campaign, Chuck Baldwin at that time had been for many years a pastor in Pensacola, Florida, and he campaigned very actively for Ron Paul, and I'm sure is still close to Ron Paul. You know, Ron Paul himself, I could never persuade him to go beyond his saying 9/11 was just blowback for our involvement overseas. But I'm just speculating it might be worth your making a physical road trip to Montana to meet Chuck Baldwin. And if he can make a breakthrough with, you know, Ron Paul's actually spoken very vocally against, you know, the COVID as being a hoax and worse. And if there could be a breakthrough with through Chuck Baldwin with getting Ron to alert all the people that follow him, it could help spark more interest this anniversary.
Yeah, interesting. I would love to talk to Chuck Baldwin. I will put him on my list too, Carl.
Yeah, maybe it's worth making a road trip to Montana.
Yeah, and I've actually spoken at the church, which I believe was his. I can't remember. It was so many years ago. Near Kalispell, or in Kalispell. Anyway.
Yes.
He most certainly knows about 9/11. And, you know, so many of our supporters have talked to Ron Paul and given him our stuff. So I can't believe that, you know, I don't know why he's just shy about it. So I don't know if Chuck.
Well, I think he has been. Maybe he's been reluctant because of Rand's ascent in politics, and maybe Ron not wanting to endanger Rand's situation. But hope springs eternal, I guess. That because he could reach millions in a day. If you were willing to, come out about it. Okay, that was it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Carl. Okay,
I think we still don't want to be labeled a conspiracy theory.
Hey, Richard, it's Chuck Smith.
Chuck, how you doing?
I'm doing great, man. You sound great, and I want to thank you for this program you put together and you and the team put together. It's fantastic.
Thank you.
It really,
thank you.
Out. And I have a question for you that I don't know if you have the, you probably don't have the answer, but I'm curious about your thoughts about this. As we know, Trump has and his attorney general have fired the attorney for the Southern District of New York that was handling our grand jury. And
yes.
So I'm just wondering if you heard anything about from any, like, replacement lawyer, and if they've commented and said, acknowledged anything about something we've been waiting on for 2 years. With the attorney being fired, I mean, we're just left, you know, my first thought was, well, that's the way to stop us.
Well, it could be the way to stop us. It could also open another door. I don't know. And Mick doesn't know either. He says he'd just be speculating. The person they have in there, he didn't have any particular good insights about her either. So I don't know. I don't have a comment.
All right. Well, I was just curious.
I was too.
Kind of a shock.
Yeah. Well, Jeffrey Berman was, for what it's worth, and I don't know what it's worth, quite an anti-Trump person. Trump is the one who said, at least many years ago, explosives brought down the buildings. If you want to know who brought down the towers, elect me president. We'll find out who brought down the towers. As if he didn't know, you know, as if he didn't buy into the official story about who brought down the towers. So we've been hoping in vain for, you know, 3 years, 4 years, that something would happen. And, of course, he can't. He couldn't go there if he wanted to right now. I mean, he doesn't have the political leverage to survive the attack that would come if he started bringing up conspiracy theories like that.
Well, just like with Obama, the reason Obama didn't look at anything and announced it right off the bat, he wasn't going to look backward. It's blackmail. I mean, they've got something on these people.
Yeah, they sure do.
You know?
Yeah.
Anyway.
I think you're right.
Great to hear from you.
You too, Chuck.
Okay.
Great to see you.
Thanks, Charles. I just wanted to check in before we have one last question for you, Richard, but is Mike King, are you on the call? Mike, you might be muted if you are. He was coming in on Skype, and I don't see it here. So, okay, I'll assume he's not here yet. Okay, Ann Hendricks, go ahead with your question for Richard.
Oh, hi, Richard. I'm sorry, it's Ann again.
Hi.
About Chuck Baldwin. I kind of forgot. It is in Kalispell, and they meet at a hotel there. If you were close, it would be awesome if you just drove over there and met him. That's like the best way to reach him, really. It seems like they
probably
have a really small congregation, but their online presence is booming all internationally, very big, getting big. So anyway, I'm sorry, I forgot the other thing I was going to ask you, but. Sorry. Anyway, go for it. So that's all.
Yeah, he could. Thanks. He goes right at the top. I mean, this guy goes straight to who's responsible for all this stuff, and he just doesn't mince words. A very, very powerful man, preacher.
Yeah, he is. Richard, I just wondered. This is Cheryl. Are you familiar with Whitney Webb's work on the anthrax and connecting it to the coronavirus? Her writings,
no.
I don't know.
No.
Oh, yeah, she's great. She connects the dark winter exercises for the anthrax to the Crimson Contagion and the Event 201 for the coronavirus. Some of the same people are involved, and several of them, in all of it. So I'll send you a link to her articles on it. You might like that. Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, I've been spending some time getting up to date on this COVID hoax. I'm not calling the disease unreal, but what they're doing with it is so. I'm if you guys didn't see yet, this group of dozens of doctors. Am I still on, Cheryl?
Yes, you are. Sorry, I muted you for a moment, but you're good now.
Okay. Dozens of doctors in their white coats outside of the Capitol Hill giving a huge presentation, which has been just censored completely on YouTube and Twitter and others. That's just so obvious when you get, I mean, how do you get doctors from all around the country, dozens and dozens of them, speaking in front of the Capitol and about the hoax, and the push toward vaccinations and stuff, and have it completely or almost completely censored? It's just such a giveaway as to their agenda and their willingness to lie. And it's just like 9/11 all over again to me, what's going on right now.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, it's huge. So it's the next step in their agenda, right, in reaching their agenda. So, well, Richard, we're out of questions here. Thank you so much for joining us today, and I love what you have planned. It sounds really great. So let us know when you have it all together and can send it out. Let us know. We'll publicize it, and maybe we can do a radio interview to publicize it also.
Perfect. So, thank you for the opportunity, Cheryl. Thanks, everybody. We'll catch up with you next time. I actually have to run to a meeting, so I got to go.
Okay, thank you.
Bye.
Okay, now, Craig, are you there? Let me just... Okay, so I've unmuted everybody, so I just want to see, is Mike King with us? Mike, are you there? Okay, so someone was on earlier. Mike?
Yes, somebody with just a phone number listed on the website, so I assumed that was him.
Yeah, I had told him around 8:30, and I don't know if he got tired of waiting and hung up. So let me, Craig, do you want to just take over and maybe have a discussion about something, and I'm just going to email him to see if that was him?
Sure. Yes.
Okay, thanks. I'll be right back.
Right. Well, so we're going to have a discussion, apparently. Okay. Since we're not going to do Q&A mode again, why don't we just keep it informal? It'll just be a couple of minutes. Anybody have anything they would like to say about anything that's
just
been brought up
David,
tonight?
I'd
or
like to say something.
Yeah, David, sure.
Yeah, so... I mean, Richard left, but he was talking about the video with the doctors doing the press conference and at the Capitol. And so I'm wondering if videos like that are censored, then why do we all know about them? I feel like there's like total information control, but they're letting us know about stuff that they're telling us is censored. And I don't know, like, what to do with that. I feel like, you know, the alternate information is tailored to me to make me freaked out about you know, the things that, about the dangerous things that are going on, just like the mainstream propaganda is tailored to, like, make the mainstream people afraid of the virus, you know. I'm wondering... What other people think about that?
David?
Yes.
David, this is Ann Hendricks. I have that question, too. Well, I mean, slightly different. But so some of these people are saying, oh, yeah, so kids should be able to go back in the fall, and, like, some of the reports are wrong. And anyway, so the idea of kids going back to school. But one person that I have listened to, and I'm not sure if others have been paying attention to him or not, is Joe Imbriano out in California, the Fullerton Informer, because his focus is on 5G. His focus is on the Wi-Fi weaponry that people think is installed in the school, and that is something that the other YouTube, you know, channels are not discussing. What is the feeling of everyone on that? I have a lot of credibility that Wi-Fi weaponry.
I don't know that person, but that's exactly what I'm talking about, is mm-hmm. that they want us to be terrified of the 5G and think that they're going to kill us all with the 5G, just like they want the mainstream people to be terrified of, like, COVID-19. That's exactly what I'm talking about. Maybe 5G isn't going to kill us all. Maybe they aren't going to, can't kill us with that. And they want us to be terrified of it.
Oh, okay.
Is Barb, I'd like to make a comment on Dr. Berman being fired.
Sure.
Should I go ahead?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, okay. Yeah, okay. It's changing the subject, but seeing it was raised before and a question to Richard. Being on the board of the Lawyers Committee, I'm very knowledgeable about this, you can imagine. Even though Mick himself, our litigation director, apparently said that it would just be guessing, it is the case that we've decided to take, and this is not for the minutes, by the way, we have decided to try to take advantage of the fact that he's been removed. And that this woman, I can't remember her name.
Strauss?
But anyway.
Audrey Strauss?
I'm sorry, what?
Audrey Strauss?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Strauss. She's the new acting U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York. So we've decided to take advantage, the Lawyers Committee has decided to take advantage of this. And we're communicating with her to kind of formally ask her to change the position of, you know, we have a mandamus lawsuit pending that we actually expect the judge to rule on sometime in August, in a few, you know, probably a couple of weeks. That's our expectation, nothing for sure. But if we can get her to change the position, which is that they won't tell us if they've done anything because of they're claiming grand jury secrecy is absolute, which it is not. There are many cases that we've argued in our mandamus filing that show that administrative rulings and procedures and actions are not covered by grand jury secrecy. So we've asked the judge in the mandamus action to take our side and force them to let us know if they've actually convened a special criminal grand jury, as they said they would do in their letter to us of November 7th of 2018. So we're taking advantage of it, and we're hoping that maybe she will be different. So we're, you know, we're not doing nothing. We're doing our best to try to leverage the situation.
Great. Okay, great. Is there, Cheryl, are you back with us?
I'm back. So I got an email from Mike King saying that he got on at 8:20 and then hung around until 8:45 and then he left the call. I just emailed him to ask him if he would be willing to join us again now. We're you know, ready for him. But I don't know. I haven't heard back from him, so maybe he's upset with us. I don't know. So, or upset with me anyway. So I'm not sure. So I'm waiting. I'm staring at my email to see if he emails back and says he's going to join us. So in the event that he doesn't join us, are there other things we want to talk about while we're on here?
This is John O'Malley.
Yeah, John.
Yes, John.
I, on the subject of COVID and the vaccine thing, I retired from FDA, and the one thing I think I've learned is you need to follow the money. The way the system works is that the large pharmaceutical and processed food companies control the members of Congress who sit on the oversight committees that control FDA, and any member of Congress that does not play ball will not receive campaign financing and will not be reelected. So if you're talking about a worldwide vaccine, and a ballpark number for a vaccine is about $100 a pop, so that would be $700 billion, which is a lot of money. Now, there is a pretty good thing on YouTube, and it's called, if you type in heated vaccine debate, Kennedy Jr. versus Dershowitz. And in that YouTube, it's more of a discussion than a debate. RFK Jr. talks about some stuff that I was involved with when I was at FDA. That I was a part of the group that was doing the Vioxx drug, and everything that RFK Jr. says is absolutely correct. So that gives me confidence.
Excuse me a minute, John.
Jr. knows what he's talking about. So I would recommend that YouTube. Over.
All right. Thank you, John. Mike King has just joined us, so I'm going to break into this conversation since he's been waiting and introduce him and let him go, and then we can continue with this after. Is that okay with everyone? I hope so.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So, Mike, sorry about earlier. We are a very enthusiastic group here with Richard Gage, so it went over our time that we had told you. But thanks for rejoining.
You know, it just flows perfectly, that topic kind of flows. I wasn't expecting it, but it really flows perfectly into things that I've been focused on recently.
Okay, great. Well, let me just introduce you, and then you can tell us all about it. I can't wait to hear it.
Sure.
So anyway, here to talk to us tonight about QAnon, what it is, what it does, is it legit, is Mike S. King, and he promotes the book written by Robert Smith on his website called QAnon, The Storm, a 120-year timeline. So I got the idea of asking him to join us on the teleconference because I have a really close friend who thinks QAnon is going to save us, and I have a lot of doubts about that, but I thought I'd be open-minded and learn more about it. So that's why I thought Mike would be a good person to come on and educate us a little bit about that. And Mike King has a website, the realhistorychannel.org, or realhistorychannel.org, formerly tomatobubble.com. He's a private investigative journalist, researcher based in the New York City area, a 1987 graduate of Rutgers University, and his subsequent 30-year career in marketing and advertising has equipped him with a unique perspective when it comes to understanding how, quote, public opinion is indeed scientifically manufactured. His marketing acumen combines with city boy instincts to make Mike King one of the most tenacious detectors of things that don't add up in the world today. And again, his website is realhistorychannel.org, and his author page at amazon.com is MS King. And so, Mike, welcome, and please take it away.
Cheryl, just before we start, didn't you want to mention that we had a little mistake in the summary?
Yes, in our summary that went out in the agenda, we said that Mike wrote the book, and that was my mistake. It was on his website, and I thought he did it first, but it isn't.
I did write that book. I wrote that under a pen name, and there's a reason for it. Yeah. I had to keep it separate from my other titles, but you can find it at realhistorychannel.org. There's a books page, but books are available in paperback and also PDF format. Except for some of my books, which were banned by Amazon. But it's all at realhistorychannel.org. But, yes, that little booklet, that is my baby.
Oh, okay. And, great. Good to know.
Okay, well, QAnon. What is QAnon? It is, you know, the media has been attacking it more and more lately. I'm sure you've noticed that. But just about every major media outlet, New York Times, Washington Post, ABC, NBC, it's international. Thousands of attacks on a so-called baseless conspiracy theory. They're wasting a lot of print and time attacking a baseless conspiracy theory. But that's the first bit of misinformation, is to call it a conspiracy theory. Because QAnon is not a conspiracy theory. It is a person. It is an individual, or it's a group of individuals, okay? Who, if you believe in QAnon, is part of the Trump inner circle. But if you believe that it's a hoax, then you have an individual here who is duped. I mean, worldwide, this is in the millions of people, and it's growing rapidly, the following. So you have someone who's imitating, impersonating the president, getting away with it, and drawing millions of people into his web. So that would be an amazing story, which makes you wonder, why is it in all of these attack pieces nobody ever asked the question, well, who is it? If it's a hoax, then who's doing it? And furthermore, don't you think someone going around influencing millions of people now, and supposedly they say it's led to violence, and the FBI calls it a terrorist group, how difficult would it be to put some agents on the case, figure out an IP address, you know, knock on the fellow's door and say, hey, what's going on? Who are you? Why are you doing this? Who are you working for? You know what I mean? So that's the question. Who is QAnon that the press is not to pursue? And the reason they don't want to pursue it is because once it becomes known that it is indeed the Trump team doing this, well, that just opens up a whole can of worms, because now you got to start talking about all of the allegations, which are explosive. And if everything is contained in those 4,000 posts, it talks.
Mike, I'm sorry, I mistakenly muted you for a second there. Yeah, you're good.
Okay.
Sorry.
Where did I leave off before we...
The Trump team. The Trump team is behind it.
Yes, it is absolutely the Trump team behind it, which is why the media does not want to ask the question, because now that would mean you have the president's inner circle openly educating millions and millions of people about everything, from the New World Order, the Rothschild, to George Soros, it ties into 9/11, child sex trafficking, satanic practices amongst the elite. Can you imagine? The President of the United States is saying this. So they're in quite a quandary, because the fake news media, if they attack it too much, it gives it too much attention. Yet at the same time, they can't ignore it. So there have been a lot of attacks, but it's still been rather subdued. It hasn't been a full frontal assault. But now, whatever anyone chooses to believe about QAnon, one thing is absolutely certain. It is the Trump team behind these posts. That cannot be disputed. And the idea is that the Trump struggle against these globalist forces, same gang that pulled off 9/11, which is why, you know, the Richard Gage conversation, you know, is a good lead-in. It's the same gang. It's the same gang. And by the way, on the very day of 9/11, when Trump was interviewed, he said repeatedly, he said it twice. He says, I don't believe those buildings came down by fire. They had to have been pre-planted explosives. So, but that is the hope of 9/11 of the QAnon following, is that when the time is right and Trump is strong enough, you know, one of the things he will expose is 9/11. So, but that's what QAnon does. He drops, they're called, it's an anonymous post. They're posting on a forum for the past, actually began in November of 2017. And to date, there's been 4,000 posts. And, you know, some of the language is cryptic. A lot of it is like in riddles, written in Socratic method of questioning and so on. You know, it's kind of deep. It's impossible to give a thorough summary to the extent that I could convince a doubter, okay, because you would have to do a bit of research. But there are things, there is an unusual knowledge and a very spooky prescience, prophecy that QAnon has manifested. So, I mean, that's the hope. And the one thing that I have my doubts on, okay, is, I'm absolutely certain that it is real. The one thing I don't know is if they can pull it off, because if you read the Q posts, for the past 3 years, the tone has been one of inevitability, that, you know, we will win, nothing can stop what's coming, it's over for them, so on and so forth. And I don't know if it's because that they have a plan that is so comprehensive that they're about to crush the bad guys, or if that's just kind of, you know, maybe rah-rah talk that they need to fire up the troops. Because I happen to believe that the globalists are still very powerful. They've been at this game for, well, really close to two centuries. It's not going to be that easy to defeat them. You saw how easily they've sucked us in to this scandemic, what I call stupid 19. So that, it gives you an idea about the power of the globalists. So I don't know who's going to win this struggle. But what I can tell you is that it's real and that it is the Trump team making these cryptic posts, and it's growing rapidly, and it's got the establishment worried. That's it in a nutshell.
Okay, Mike. All right. Let's put us into Q&A. Okay, so anyone has a question for Mike or a comment, please press star 6. Mike, while we're waiting for people, I have one to ask you. I'm confused. It seems to me that Trump has given away everything to Israel, and to me, you know, a lot of the Zionists are behind the globalists. So I'm just wondering how that all fits together. Do you have any evidence on that, or anything, any thoughts on that? Okay, are you maybe me? Oh, I have you muted. Just hang on, Mike. Okay, sorry, Mike. You're unmuted now.
Okay. You know, in his first few months in office, I became very down on Trump precisely for that reason. He just seemed to be like an Israeli cookish kisser. But now, following his actions and also correlating them to his posts, I believe he has played the Israeli situation very delicately and very skillfully. If you look superficially, okay, he put the embassy in Jerusalem. That was supposed to be a big deal. And he recognized the Golan Heights as Israeli, and that was supposed to be another capitulation to Israel. But now, let's look at the situation more closely. Those are really superficial cosmetic gestures in spite of all the publicity that you heard. I mean, who cares where the embassy is, okay? And as far as the Golan Heights, that was stolen, 50, 55 years ago and occupied by Israel. It's kind of a fait accompli. What's much more significant is that Donald Trump has taken away Israel, or the Mossad's two most potent weapons. They're gone. One of them was the ISIS mercenary army, which is Mossad, CIA, all the way. Okay? They're gone. You don't hear anything from ISIS anymore, do you? What happened to ISIS? Well, there's a reason. While Putin and the Iranians were pounding them on the ground, Trump, in his third or fourth month in office, he completely cut off all the CIA funding for these so-called moderate rebels, which is ISIS. So they dried up and they withered away in all these different countries. You don't hear about ISIS anymore. Where were they? It used to be ISIS in Iraq, ISIS in Syria, ISIS in Egypt, ISIS in the Philippines, ISIS in Malaysia. They're all gone. They withered up because Trump has gotten a hold of the hierarchy of the CIA and he cut off the funding. Major, major loss for Israel. The second major Israeli weapon that, again, Trump has put out of business is the Jeffrey Epstein, Ghislaine Maxwell blackmail operation. Now, the media, you love how the media is trying to do a limited hangout. They're trying to spin that story like it's an eccentric billionaire who was a pervert and maybe some important people got caught up. No, it's much, much deeper than that. He had pinholes in every room of that creepy island, also on his ranch in New Mexico, his mansion in New York. I mean, God only knows who the most powerful people in the world are that he's got on tape, okay, having sex with little girls. And who knows how young these little girls or little boys are. But that island is out of business. The blackmail operation out of business. And that was Mossad all the way. There's no doubt about it. Jeffrey Epstein was just a little puppet. It was Maxwell who ran the operation. And her, she is the daughter of Robert Maxwell, the big media mogul, who used to own big newspapers in London, the New York Daily News. And he was a Mossad agent. And he died in the 90s, very mysterious circumstances, assuming it wasn't a fake death. But he was buried in Israel with the highest honors, Robert Maxwell, facing the Western Wall. Okay? So, and this is his baby girl. And so she ran the operation, and the real power behind her was Les Wexner of Victoria's Secret. And now you start to get into a web of mega billionaires, and this leads to 9/11. But getting back to my point, you know, Epstein and Maxwell, they did whatever the hell they wanted when Bush was president, Clinton was president, Obama was president, and Trump was even talking about Epstein when he was a candidate. He said, this guy Epstein's untouchable right now. Well, lo and behold, he's out of business. The U.S. Justice Department, FBI under Trump. So this is a major, major loss for Israel.
So, Mike, do you think he was just doing that to cover his own butt? Because Trump has been involved with Epstein right on his plane and on the island, from what I understand.
Well, this is the spin they're trying to put that, you know, Trump was one of the clients. No way. Trump years ago kicked him out of his club, and it is Trump that had him, you know, arrested. You see, if they had anything on Trump, he would have been untouchable, just like he was untouchable under Clinton and under Bush and under Obama. So, you know, the fact that, I mean, Trump had his picture taken with everybody. Ghislaine Maxwell was like a New York socialite. You know, you run into somebody at a function, hey, let's take a picture. That's nothing, okay? Far more significant is photos of Bill Clinton on Jeffrey's plane with young girls, actual photos. And then we have the flight logs that we know about. You've got Bill Clinton is on there. You've got Tom Hanks, Oprah Winfrey. I mean, so many big people. But even that doesn't tell the whole story because people on nearby islands report that it was many planes coming in and out, private planes. So a lot of these big shots, they didn't go on Jeffrey Epstein's plane. They took their own. So now it is Trump. And QAnon, before anyone started talking about Epstein, okay, like 2 years ago, it was talking about how critical this operation, you know, was. And it was taken down. So, but that's a big part of QAnon ideology, I guess, is that when this Epstein thing unravels, and this is all supposed to happen in the second term, it's going to lead to more and more and more layers of exposure, devastating blows for the establishment. Now, as for people, I know there's a lot of people that mock the whole idea of QAnon because it's going on 3 years now and we don't see high-profile arrests and, you know, where's the action, you know? But this is critical to understand. The system was so corrupt, and there are so many crooked judges and politicians, so many blocks, so many operatives and apparatchiks that had to be removed. And indeed, the number of people that have been removed and gotten out of the way and replaced with Trump loyalists or just decent people in the last 2.5-3 years, it's astonishing. It's something like, I think it's close to 80 House Republicans are gone, and these were mostly all anti-Trump Republicans, and so many of them just retired. You look at someone like Paul Ryan, and QAnon predicted all this. He says there's going to be a lot of retirements, but they're not voluntary. So at some point, someone said that these Republicans who are crooked, because the idea is to salvage the Republican Party because there's still some decent people in that. And then later destroy the Democrat Party. But, I mean, a guy like Paul Ryan, I mean, the guy's young. He's a Speaker of the House. He was a vice presidential candidate and just up and resigns one day. Same with Jeff Corker. The same with Bob Corker of Tennessee, Senator. Jeff Flake of Arizona. So many, okay? And it's the same with judges. So many judges have been appointed by Trump. There's so many corrupt DOJ and FBI and CIA people are gone, okay, and replaced with Trump people. So this is the necessary prep work, because with all these people in place, it would be impossible for Trump to do anything with all this evidence that they have. Now, getting back to QAnon and this evidence, this is the belief that the NSA still has a lot of good people in it, as does military intelligence, that the only institution in America that was not corrupt to its core is the military. I mean, there's a lot of crooked generals and admirals who are political appointees, but at the same time, there's a lot of patriots, and it's the military patriots who are behind QAnon, who are behind Trump. So, now,
okay,
as we know, the NSA, they've got everything. Everybody's phone calls, everybody's emails, we know that, right? Remember the Edward Snowden debacle? Snowden was a CIA agent, he was a dirty rat, deep stater, who was infiltrated into the NSA for the purpose of embarrassing the agency. The ultimate plan would be to get the NSA's capabilities over to the CIA. But that has failed. But the fact is, the NSA, they've got everything, and all of these child rapists and these crooks and all their dirty deals and their child trafficking and their bribery and their kickbacks, everything is monitored by the NSA. Problem is, you can't introduce it. That information is not actionable, so they can gather all the info they want, but they can't do anything with it. The idea is to introduce this evidence in a legal fashion. In legal terminology, it's called washing the fruit of the poisoned tree, because the evidence is no good because the way it was obtained. But if you find a way to inject this into legitimate investigations, then it becomes usable. This leads to the Bob Mueller investigation, and I believe that Bob Mueller was working for Trump all along. And you have all these people who, and years ago, QAnon said, don't worry about Mike Flynn, don't worry about Roger Stone, all these people who were arrested. We were reassured that everything would be okay in due time. Mike Flynn was head of military intelligence at one time. QAnon says he knows where all the bodies are buried. So there's so many investigations going on behind the scenes. You've got the Durham investigation and so on. And the idea is that this fruit of the poison tree is being washed. And instead of taking on this crooked ruling establishment with a direct military coup, which would have had devastating implications on this country, they are to be cleaned out legally. Every I dotted, every T crossed. So it is a military coup of good guys, but the coup is being done by legal means. And so much of what we're seeing fits that. I mean, you look at the absolute panic that the Democrats are exhibiting now, and the globalists. I mean, look what they hit us with. This COVID business, this Black Lives Matter stuff. I mean, they are so desperate to get Trump out of there. And it's fear and it's panic, because when Durham comes out, and this Durham investigation, this isn't going to be like a report like the prior one. There was the Horowitz report and the Huber report, and they were quite damning, okay? But they didn't have teeth to it. They just tell you all these naughty things went on. Durham is different. He's a prosecutor. He's coming out with indictments, okay, for the FISA warrant abuse and the spying of Obama. They lied to a court, you know, and all this stuff. But this is just the low-level stuff. And it's going to come out. People are going to be indicted very soon. I believe this could be part of the October surprise or September surprise, hopefully August. But when it does, it's supposed to shock people and prepare them for subsequent layers of the really nasty stuff. So that's QAnon. And, you know, every day I just see more and more pieces of the puzzle in real life that fit this scenario, which he started talking about 3 years ago. And again, it is the Trump team. On that, I have no question. How do I know? Because you have to follow the posts. And they put all these clues. There's constantly clues. I mean, just a few weeks ago, Eric Trump put a Q put a flag up with a Q, the Q symbol in the flag. Mike Flynn and his whole family on the 4th of July, they recited the QAnon motto, which is where we go one, where we go all, and he posted it. I mean, they put it in your face. This is the Trump team that is doing it. So, again, it is the Trump team. It is real. The only thing I don't know, like I said earlier, is have they become that powerful that they could pull it off?
Okay.
I mean, that's a hell of an undertaking to take down the New World Order, let me tell you.
Yeah, all right. Well, thanks for that discussion there, Mike. And we do have a few questions here, so let's get to those. Fern, go ahead.
Hi, thanks. I have been asking for years and years to be able to talk. I write about 9/11 almost every single day. I don't identify power with wars. I identify power with compassion and love. And that's what I need to learn. And Trump is not standing up for Judaism. He's standing up for land and money, the same thing he's been doing. And in 1988, I've been connected with this for years, and 9/11 didn't started way back. Israel just not liking their neighbors. It started way back in the 60s. And Trump was in heavy financial debt. And the way he got out was, well, you can figure it out. There's a storm war and money laundering. And so I don't see him as any kind of a leader. So, but my way of thinking is different. I'm here to save my life, actually. I'm not here to philosophize or anything like that. But I identify with all the shares on oil and global warming because, and the Green New Deal as related to 9/11, because 9/11 is about oil. And when I walk in the streets down by the river, the hospitals, all these fancy hospitals, and they're advertising cancer, and here we have 5G, and it makes me really angry because they're using the people to build these buildings, and that's how the military gets money. So I just am grateful to be able to share, but I don't mind listening. I could hear about 9/11. It reminds me of that day because, like, I knew I was writing about it way before.
Fern, do you have a question for Mike about QAnon or anything related to that?
I just expressed my feeling of what he said. I don't give any power to killing. Like, that's not powerful. That's a sickness. So that's my response. Thank you for letting me share.
Okay. Thank you, Fern. Mike, did you want to respond to that, or ready for the next question?
No, I mean, other than to say that this is all the direct linkage from, you know, 9/11. This is just a subsequent chapter of the same book, but that is the big one. That is the one that, if it ever comes out. But the public's got to be prepared. But no, we should never stop, never forget 9/11. Of course, but at the same time, you know, the big picture is to take these people down, and you know, I mean, talking about how the buildings fell and this and that constantly, you know, after a while, it doesn't accomplish much. Point fingers. We know who did it. So, that's
okay.
All.
Okay, great. Next question then is for Lynn Cornelison. Lynn, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. This is Lynn from Iowa. Is Pompeo part of the inner circle, or is he excluded from that inner circle? How would he fit into that?
Pompeo, I believe, is very close to the president. He's trustworthy. He's another one who plays a very good game of, oh, I love Israel, I love Israel. Again, he was the head of the CIA, he was the head of the State Department, and, you know, I mean, look, Assad is still in power in Syria, and that's because of Trump and Putin. ISIS is out of business, Epstein is out of business, so, you know, that's what I focus on. And and by the way, QAnon has said for the longest time, he speaks in code, he says, trust Kansas. Well, Kansas is believed to be Pompeo because he's from Kansas. So, yeah, I believe he's one of the good guys. He's not one of the – but what Trump did early on, it was interesting, and this turned a lot of people against him. But now you look in retrospect, you understand it. He appointed a lot of rats. There was that McMaster, and later on there was Bolton. I mean, so many of them are gone. And this was more of him, you know, he's not that strong enough, so he has to keep these people close and until he can get more power. It's the same formula that Putin followed in Russia when he took over, and then he got rid of all the rats. But, yeah, he's gotten rid of a lot of established people. But I do believe Pompeo is one of the good guys.
And you also said, did you say that there's same 9/11 gang is in here, kind of behind the COVID, partly?
Well, yeah, it's the architects of the new world order, and that's the big picture, is to have that one world government. Why did they blow up those buildings? Well, it was twofold. One is to, I mean, you have to have this massive military buildup and then just go into the Middle East and Central Asia and just take over everything. And then, of course, there was Israel kind of piggybacks off of it. So the two are connected. They wanted to, once Iraq was overthrown and then Syria and then Libya and then Lebanon and Israel would expand. So that was the dual purpose. But world government was supposed to come out of 9/11. And indeed, the tower that they put in its place, it's called the One World Trade Center. And not one as in the address, the physical mailing address. That's, the name is One World. So I mean, these are the people. I mean, really, they're behind all the major disasters, wars, economic hardships of the last – if you really want to get into it, it goes back almost two centuries. But they are the ones who pulled the New World Order crime gang. You know, George Soros, Rothschild, Rockefeller, that the usual suspects.
Okay, I got one more question. Why? Okay, why does Trump seem to be going along with COVID when he could have fought the fight then when he first called it a hoax and then something changed?
Okay.
It disturbs me to see him coming out with masks on.
Right. Well, this goes back to the power of globalists and the way that they have to be fought. The shutdown came about. It was an agent of that globalist demon, Bill Gates, over in Britain. His name is Neil Ferguson. He came up with a phony baloney computer model that said 2.2 million Americans are going to die. 500,000 Britons are going to die. Okay? And Dr. Anthony Fauci and Scarfley, Deborah Birx, the so-called infectious disease experts, treatment. They took this phony, but they're also agents of Gates, and they went into Trump's office and said, Mr. President, 2.2 million Americans are going to die. We've got to shut this thing down. Now, if he'd have said to him, all right, get the hell out of my office, they would have ran with the operation anyway, with all these fake numbers that they're pumping out. They would have went right to the New York Times or Washington Post and say, He told us that, that this wasn't real and that he didn't want to work with us. We warned them. You know, they would have killed him. So it would have been the end of his presidency. So he did it about face, and he played it a different way. So he put these people in, he put them front and center. He let the thing play out, and now we're beginning to see little by little. I mean, Dr. Fauci, months ago, he was a demigod. Now, not so much, okay? And little by little, people are getting fed up, and more people are starting to question, you know, are these numbers exaggerated? Why are we being frightened to death with just because people are testing positive? That doesn't mean anything that you test positive for. At one point, we might have 60-70% of the country had. It doesn't mean it's harmful to you. So he is making a counterattack now, but this thing had to play out the way it did. He had to roll with it because they put him in a corner.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm still weighing all that out as I watch this drama keep going. I don't like it.
Yeah.
Here we are. Do you think he's blackmailed or what? Or do you think he just decided a better way to fight it?
No, he's not blackmailed or anything like that. It just goes back to what I said earlier, that in spite of all the damage and all the blows that have been struck against the One Worlders, the globalists, they are very strong. And, you know, it's not a one-punch knockout game with that. It's a long, drawn-out game of chess. And people need to be patient. But I tell you this, if Trump wins re-election, he's going to have so much power in his second term, and he's going to come out with a vengeance against these people. And that's when we're going to see some really – that's when the fun will start. And that's why this election is so critical.
Oh, one more comment I'd like to make before I'm done here.
Yes.
Daniel Bell that exposed Ferguson, he also showed that the no flights left Wuhan after January 23rd. That's something that Ferguson was up to.
Yeah,
I thought that was a very interesting article by Bell.
Well, you know, all of the early diagnoses of these things were diagnosed by symptoms. I mean, that's another part of the scam. It's in the CDC documents even. They are telling hospitals, they're telling doctors, nursing homes, that you can diagnose by symptoms. That's perfectly acceptable.
Yeah.
So what? Someone's got a fever? They have trouble breathing? You label them as COVID. Doesn't matter if they got COPD, pneumonia, bronchitis, or if they're morbidly obese, or if they're just 90 years old. Everything is being labeled COVID. A lot of it is done by symptom. And even the tests are not. Well, there's a whole other story there.
Yes, and I follow Rappaport daily. I've got all these articles printed off from last January 12th.
Yeah. And I don't know if you know about it.
Thanks.
Anyway. Sure.
So we have five more people who have questions, so I just wanted to move it along if we can a little bit. Okay, David Rold, you're next. Go ahead.
Hi, this is David Rold from Massachusetts. So I'm still skeptical that Trump is any good, but I'm trying to remain open-minded, and you covered some of the things I was going to ask about why he hired Dr. Fauci. Why did Trump, like when he took the money away from the World Health Organization, he gave it to over $1 billion to Gavi, another Bill Gates vaccine operation. And, I'm wondering, like, why did Trump send the Homeland Security agents to Portland and stuff when that, you know, is playing into, like, making people hate Trump? Like, that's just what, if there's, like, a color revolution going against Trump, that's just what they wanted him to do. But I mean, I don't believe that, because like the next day Nancy Pelosi like voted to fund Homeland Security with more. I think Trump is like part of the deep state, but there are other things I'm wondering why he did. Why did Trump have Juan Guaido come be at his State of the Union address? Why did he try to overthrow the Venezuelan government? Why did Trump,
he's very strategic. Let me tell you about, you bring up the question of Venezuela. At the time, he badmouths the Venezuelan government. Guess what happened to the popularity of the Venezuelan he knows what he's doing. He has no intent. He does this time and time and time again. So I can understand how people, if they haven't figured out how he plays, they get disillusioned. I'll give you another example. Look at North Korea. He said he wanted to make peace with North Korea, reach out to them, and he was attacked for it, was ridiculed for it. So what does he do? He makes an about face. Remember, he was saying, oh, Rocket Man and Fire and Fury, and we're going to destroy North Korea. And he sounded like a madman. And this is exactly what the globalists wanted to hear. Meanwhile, unbeknownst to people, there was back-channel negotiation going on the whole time, and he flipped the tables, and peace on the Korean Peninsula. I mean, South Korea, North Korea, along the South Korean president said Trump should get the Nobel Peace Prize. Trump goes to North he meets with Kim Il-sung. They actually hold hands and they walk into the militarized zone. Syria. He was threatening to bombs Syria, and then he lobs some missiles into an empty field.
Yeah, I know that.
So he has to, every time that there's an opposition building to him to do something, he gives the lip service and he makes like a move, but then he pulls the rug out and he diffuses everything. He did this after that high school shooting. He says, yeah, we're going to take a look at gun control. And all the people said, oh, my God, Trump. But then he did nothing. So this is how he plays. You've got to watch. You can't watch the head fakes with Trump. You've got to watch the action. And just look at the world. I mean, we're at peace. There's no wars going on. There's no proxy wars going on anymore. We were almost at war with Russia over that Ukraine business. That's been deactivated. The Korean Peninsula has been deactivated. He's pulling us out of Afghanistan. They're giving him a hard time with that. ISIS is gone. Peace is just breaking out all over. And he was able to pull this off by sounding like a crazy warmonger. It's just a beautiful strategy.
Why is he trying to extradite Julian Assange?
Assange is, there's more to that than meets the eye. He's got a ton of evidence. I talked earlier about washing the fruit with a poison tree. I think Assange is safe and he's in good hands. And it's just like what happened with Roger Stone, General Flynn. It looked for a while like these guys were in trouble, but there was a purpose to it all. So, and the stuff I don't even understand. Sometimes it doesn't make sense, and you have to wait a while. But again, there's just no denying that those who have given us perpetual war, they hate Trump because he's not giving it to them, and he's ending. So.
As far as the situation with the
rioters, he's playing that strategically too. You're not going to see a big crackdown. Rather, he's forcing the Democrats to defend the Antifa and the Black Lives Matter. So this is like election posturing. He's going to send the feds in and end it because that's not good for him. What's good for him is that, you know, this thing is contained, but it makes the Democrats look bad. And that's what's happening now. And people are beginning to turn. I'm here in the New York City area, and New York City's out of control. And there's like New York liberals are thinking of voting for Trump. So that's how it looks. Next question.
I can't hear whoever's trying to talk. Is that?
It was still David. I said I don't see liberals voting for Trump. I live in Massachusetts, and everyone here is believing the COVID stuff, and they're really crazy. So.
Well, right. I didn't say liberals are voting for Trump. I meant some liberals. Some people, or maybe let's not call them liberals. Let's call them moderate, middle-of-the-road types who are seeing this violence play out. And even though they don't like Trump, the Democrats now look crazy.
Okay, all set, David? Can we go on?
Yep.
Okay, thank you. Okay, next, Carl Golovin, go ahead.
Mike, hi, Carl Golovin. Thanks for taking questions. You actually touched on what I wanted to raise, which was that I haven't followed Q closely, but a friend of mine who has says that maybe Q threads start with classified information, which can't really be, of course, disclosed directly. So, the concepts are sort of farmed out to those who are following the threads to investigate on their own by raising relevant questions that will point them in the right direction for their own research. And actually, the technical term for what you're calling washing the fruit of the poisonous tree is, from my career experience, is just parallel construction, which means you're given a classified lead and you parallel construct a non-classified basis for pursuing leads and evidence that will lead you to the proper result. One question for you on, I've been optimistic about Trump. I was earlier, and he kind of lost me when, under the JFK Records Act of 1992, in October of 17, literally, if he had done nothing, the National Archives was under a mandate to release all the still withheld Kennedy assassination records. And he teased right up to the last minute, they're coming out. And then he pulled the rug out from under it. He actually intervened and said, well, 2021, it'll be revisited. Now, to me, that's, I find trouble, I have trouble finding
when,
any.
When did he say it would be revisited?
I'm sorry?
I said, when did he say that it would be revisited?
2021. So, of course, that means that he would have to be reelected. But the thing is, he literally, if he had not said a word, if he just said, let the, the JFK Records Act run its course, he's not going to act to withhold any records. So he's, if something happens where he's not reelected, obviously he won't be there to say, okay, now all the records can come out. He literally could have accomplished it with very little overt action. So if you have any perspective on that.
Well, I mean, if you listen to Q, just the way they post, the two-term presidency of Donald Trump is a done deal. It's an inevitability. So if he's thinking along those lines, then 2021 would be the better time to strike, sort of not shooting until you see the whites of their eyes, so to speak, because in 2021 he's going to have immense power. So that's the only thing I could think of. Because it is important to know, and I don't say this is true or not true, but QAnon speaks with absolute certainty of a two-term presidency, like it's a done deal. So if that's true, then maybe we'll have to wait till 2021 to, reserve judgment on the issue that you just raised.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Carl.
Okay, next, Barbara Honegger, go ahead.
Hi, this is Barbara Honegger, and thanks for taking our questions. We really, really appreciate your being on the call. I have a comment, and I think if I can remember them, two questions. The first really quick comment is, I know that, I believe it was you, mentioned that on the day of 9/11, Trump, said, though these buildings weren't brought down by the planes, there were explosives involved. That is true. But 2 days later on the 13th, he totally backtracked and put out the official story. So it wasn't long before he was gotten to. I just want to put that on the table. My first question is, I disagree with you about your certainty that QAnon is the Trump people. I think that that is your belief, and I know
there's no doubt about that one. And I guess,
in your mind, there's no doubt.
No, it's not my mind. When you have, they're known as Q proofs. It's difficult to explain unless you're following them. I have read all 4,000 posts, and typically I find people say, oh, it's not this and that. And I say to them, with respect, how many of the posts have you read? So these posts clearly indicate, sometimes they're done in synchronicity with Trump posts. They're like cute little hints, and you see them time and time again, and they're clearly deliberate. This is coming from, let me ask you, who do you think it is then?
Well, it's clear to me that whoever Q is, if you're correct as to the level of Q clearance, I mean, in fact, Q claimed very early on that he or she, we should say, or they, were calling he, she, or they Q because the highest nuclear
clearance is Q clearance. So effectively Q, if Q is who Q claims Q is the deep state, is as high as you can get in the deep state. So let's be clear about that. But my main question is, having read all of the 4,000 posts,
why would Trump's people promote the deep state? If Q is the deep state,
I couldn't hear you.
Why would someone like Trump's son or Mike Flynn? Why would they openly promote something that's a deep state? Are you saying that Mike Flynn is deep state?
Of course he is. I mean, the deep state is anybody. Let me finish. The deep state is anybody who has the highest level clearances in the classification system. That's just the reality. And Q labeled Q's self Q based upon the claim that Q had Q clearance, which I was in the White House with a secret clearance, and I know that Q was the very highest level of top secret code clearance. So that is, you can't get higher than in the deep state or the high state, I prefer to call it, than that. But I have a simple question for you, because this is a 9/11 related leader's call. And that is, with all of your having read, when you're having read all 4,000 or so posts by this Q, what in specific detail, if anything, has Q revealed or said about 9/11? About who did it, the facts about it, et cetera. Can you detail those for us?
The only thing Q has said about 9/11 is, is something we will never forget. He said that the Mossad and the CIA control everything. There are no posts that specifically say that the Mossad and the CIA did 9/11.
Well, are there any posts that said who did 9/11? Because I'm telling you, if not, Q is not a good guy. If Q has access to all this inside science-level classification information, and like Snowden says nothing about 9/11, then that's extremely suspicious.
No, not at all. Because as QAnon ever said, that the Arabs did 9/11, or that Osama bin Laden did 9/11? Is that said that?
No, of course, we already know that's not true. My question is, has Q ever said who Q thinks did 9/11, the real perpetrators?
No.
I'll bet not.
Why do you say that suspicion? Q has said that the Rothschild family, Mossad, they control the world. They stage false flag terror attempts.
Have Q ever said who did 9/11? Has ever named names?
Why should he? The game's not over yet. Q hasn't said who killed Kennedy either. Q hasn't said who killed. You know, Q says JFK Jr.'s plane crash was not an accident, but he never said who did it. I mean, it's not the way they're communicating at this time, but.
We already know those things anyway from what's in the public domain. So that's no great reveal.
No.
Anyway, I have one other comment. I have one other comment that I'd like your response to, and that is, from my point of view, I totally agree that the cases, the numbers of cases of COVID-19 are exaggerated for some geopolitical end. But one thing that we can say for sure about this whole global shutdown, effectively, regardless of what it's based on, is that in my mind, it is a clear sword in the heart of the globalists. I mean, what has it done? It's closed every border in the world, even between states within the United States, between cities in the United States, between countries, between European nations within the EU. That's anti-globalist, back to the ultimate nation state boundaries and isolationism. It's anti-globalist.
Well, from the globalist point of view, that's just a temporary setback. I mean, because once they get their vaccine with the track and everything, then we can travel again. So this closing of the borders is not intended to be permanent. Everything's going to go back to normal once we obey and take our injections.
Yeah, well, we won't do it. The latest poll in the United States, 70% of Americans would not take the vaccine, 70%.
Yeah, I don't think they would be able to get away with it. I agree with you, but I know the Lord sure try, because there's still a substantial number of Americans who, worship Dr. Fauci and Bill Gates. I mean, hopefully day by day, week by week, that'll begin to diminish. It is diminishing. And hopefully some good information will come out. But, if it ends up blowing up in the globalist face, not by design, it's just by the way it was counterplayed. But,
you for your answers. I appreciate
sure.
it. We could move.
Okay, thank you, Barbara. Next, we have Xander. Xander Arena. Go ahead, Xander.
Okay, hey, Mike. Listen, I really appreciate your perspective. I pretty well disagree. So I want to know, have you ever heard of Justice for Katie, Katie Johnson's allegations of being raped by Trump when she was 13?
I've heard of that, but I mean, how many allegations are made against Trump? But
yeah,
I gotta believe something like that would be on the front page of the New York Times.
It's interesting that it wasn't, and I'll leave it there on that one. NSA leadership, principal participants in the 9/11 operation, and you can learn more about that by watching a film called A Good American with Bill Binney. I think you'd really, really enjoy it. It's a great film. It's a part of our history.
NSA is not.
I was hopeful for Q. I really was in 2016. I think a lot of people in this, we were prepared for a revolution. We were so tired of it. And Q seemed to appease that anger. But in 4 years, you know, we've been hearing the storm is coming, and Trump has had so many opportunities to actually do something, to blow 9/11 wide open. And I just haven't seen it happen, man. So I've really lost faith in that.
I don't think you heard what I said in your earlier.
I did. I heard about the parallel construction.
Your military.
And frankly, we could.
You're going to let me ask the question. You want to respond?
We could. You know, and we could put an end to all of this.
No, it doesn't work like that, my friend. You just don't go in and wave a hand. This deep state is everywhere. And let me ask you this. If I gave you a task of going out and killing a rabid lion, how would you do it?
I'd probably use a 308.
Now, how would you do it?
Would you charge
him with a spear, or would you creep?
Hey, Mike, Epstein came about because the New York Police Department and the Miami, detectives in Miami.
No. Epstein came about because Trump shut it down.
FBI.
You have Trump derangement syndrome.
Okay, guys, can we talk one at a time? Hello?
Well, he won't shut up.
Okay, I got a big list.
Okay, Xander, can you let Mike respond to your thoughts and questions?
Yes.
Okay.
Go.
With all respect, you have Trump derangement syndrome. To say something like that Trump had nothing to do with shutting down Epstein's island, I mean, it's his Justice Department. This was Jeff Sessions' final act before he exited the stage. It's his Justice Department. He's President of the United States. It would have been so easy to say, let this guy go. That's what Bush did. That's what Clinton did. That's what Obama did.
Okay, Xander, let him finish.
Okay, all right.
Okay, it's up to the New York City Police Department. They have no jurisdiction over the Virgin Islands. I mean, the FBI went down there. They shut everything down. I mean, this is Trump took down Epstein. And before
Xander, please let him finish, and then you can respond when he's done.
I know. Okay, he wants to believe Trump is a child rapist and that Epstein has dirt on him. I mean, that's fine. Continue to believe it. But I'm going to tell you, next year at this time, you will see. And I'll bet you a dollar.
Okay.
I hope you're right, man. I do. I hope you're right. I lost the game. So, you know, look, Ghislaine's a great guy, a lady, according to him, right? So, anyways, you mentioned that Mueller was maybe, on the right side of things, man. But going back to 9/11, total co-conspirator. He stopped the Pentagon bombing.
I can't hear you too well.
Okay. I disagree that Mueller is on the right side of things. After the Las Vegas shooting, Trump took huge amounts of money the Republican National Committee did from Adelson rather than investigate his involvement in that shooting, so that was a real problem for me. Trump brought in PNAC traders, Bolton, Abrams, you know, those guys.
Yeah, where's Bolton now?
Mass murder of 3,000 people in New York.
Wait a minute.
Why bring him in?
Why bring in Giuliani?
Mike, now please let Xander finish. Thank you.
So the PNAC crowd. They despise Trump. They're all supporting. They all endorsed Hillary. They're all supporting Biden, Bill Kristol, and that dirty bunch. They despise Trump.
Why bring him in then? I feel like
you got to understand. This is what you're not getting. The presidency of the United States is not a one man dictatorship. In the big scheme of things, it's. I mean, you've got the Congress. You've got the Senate. You've got the governors. Look what these governors are doing, shutting down their states just to hurt Trump. You've got big investment houses that they blackmail the Fortune 500 to go along with political agendas. Do you know that? This is so big. This is why I said I don't know if he can pull it off. But to say, well, he hasn't done this. He didn't do this, this and that. He's one man, and he doesn't even control totally the executive branch of his own government, because there's just thousands and thousands and thousands of these rats beneath him. So if they are to be defeated, believe me, this takes years. I mean, when they took down the mafia in New York City back in the day, it was years to take it down. They didn't just go in and say, you'll put you out of business. They had to infiltrate. Then they got the lower guys to rat out the higher guys. It was years and years. And then when the collapse came, it came quickly.
Believe me,
if Trump does not deliver in his second term, I'll be right there with you condemning him. But you cannot say at this early juncture, you know, this hasn't happened. Focus on the stuff that has happened. A ton of stuff has happened. Are you kidding me? If they got Hillary Clinton in there, you know where we'd be right now? We would be in the Paris Climate Accord. You wouldn't even be able to fill your car up with gas. It would be so expensive if they got Hillary in there. The guns would have been gone by now. We'd have been in war with Russia over Syria. ISIS would be expanding. I mean, just stop and think what Hillary would have done to this country. And people are going to say Trump is, you know, was on the same team as Hillary. No, you've got to give it time. I will pass my verdict on Trump.
I'm giving it time, and I'll ask you to keep an open mind that it could be a psyop as well. Okay?
It can't be a psyop because there's all right.
Thank you, Xander.
I'm so sorry. Hey, one question. This is important for me, please. You said you read all the posts. Like Barbara asked about 9/11, has QAnon ever addressed the mass shootings in this country as being false flags or covert ops?
What has happened is there have been shootings, and QAnon has posted how convenient every time there's like we strike a major blow and there's a shooting. Now, QAnon does say that the terrorist attacks are false flags. And you know, that's another thing. Just like Barbara was fixated, he's got to condemn 9/11. I mean, it's too early for that. And he has put it this way: anybody who follows QAnon, all right, or anyone who has begun to follow it, even if they had no experience before as a so-called conspiracy theorist, believe me, by now they do not believe that the 9/11 fairy tale, because the message of QAnon is everything is fake. Okay. So, that's why I gotta say, watch the ball, not the head fakes. And remember, these things take time.
All right, Xander, are you all set?
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Xander. I'll expect that dollar next year.
Okay. All right, and our last question is from Sheila Casey. Sheila, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I have two questions. One may be dispatched with really quickly, possibly. The other one maybe not so much. I know that a lot of the Q followers believe that that JFK Jr. is still alive. I'm curious if you believe that, and if so, why?
Okay. Well, QAnon himself has never said that. So this is something that you know, some people in the, I guess you call it the movement, picked up on these little clues here and there. I don't believe it. I'm not close to anything because we live in a world where everything is fake, so anything's possible. But no, I it's not something. I don't believe it.
Okay, so on to the second one. I haven't followed Q very much at all. I'm very peripherally. So I have never seen anything that looked to me like solid evidence that that it's anything other than, you know, somebody having a lark. Can you give me any, like, something that would be the equivalent of, say, the collapse of Building 7, something that's sort of the smoking gun? Do you have anything that would convince us that that this is something other than just having a lark? I mean, what is the strongest piece of evidence you've got?
The single strongest would have to be, I mean, there's a lot of them, but the one that really blew me away on 4th of July is when General Mike Flynn and his family did a video when he took an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution, which was QAnon is asking everybody to do that. Put out of QAnon is specifically saying, make a video yourself, put it on Twitter, and they actually linked to it on QAnon. And so here you have Mike Flynn and his whole family taking that oath, and at the end they say, where we go one, where we go all, which Q has posted hundreds of times over the last 3 years. That's the Q model. So that is indisputable evidence of Mike Flynn saying, I'm down with the Q.
How much time elapsed between Q saying he wanted people to do this and Flynn actually doing it?
Actually, it had been going on for like several weeks already. And if you follow QAnon, there's probably, 50 or 60 links to just people at random who are just posting this oath to the Constitution, and then they close with where we go one, where we go all. So he'd already had posted like 30 or 40. And then on the 4th of July, Flynn does the exact same thing. Just last week, Eric Trump posts a Q on a flag. And then there's been many occasions, and Trump has been attacked for this in the mainstream media, where, you know, Trump, when he tweets, a lot of times he retweets somebody else, and that person will have a QAnon logo in their little byline. And you have all of these media attacks saying, why is Trump reposting QAnon? He knows what he's doing. But really, I think, so, and there's many, many other cases like this, but to me, I go back to that question. If this is some clown imitating the inner circle of the president of the United States, and he's got millions of people riled up, why hasn't someone in the media asked the question, Mr. Trump, what's going on with this Q stuff? Why are you allowing this person to impersonate you? You know, nobody dares to ask that question. But yeah, no, there's no question that Trump is encouraging this, and therefore knows about it. So, I mean, you have to really follow it to become absolutely convinced of that. But those few examples I gave you, hopefully, will give you some food for thought.
Well, those few examples actually, to me, don't seem all that compelling. Nothing on the level of what we've got in terms of, you know, say, collapse of Building 7. But and I realize there may be a lot more, but I've kind of had react everything I've heard about QAnon that it seems like it to me it gives the impression of basically, you know, wishful thinking that there is going to be someone who's going to come swooping in and save us from a dire fate. I also really wonder why Trump would have if he's really had this much effect and this much success in cleaning out the you know, the bad guys, I don't believe he would have had this much that the bad guys would have had this much success in basically doing this entire economic act of terrorism on the United States and on the entire world with these lockdowns, which have destroyed our economy and ruined many lives. I mean, if we're waiting for the second term for some good things to happen, there's a lot of people that aren't going to make it to the second term.
Well, again, that goes back to the original point I made, where the only doubts I have is can they pull this off? Yeah, of course the globalists are strong. They've got the media, and they've got academia, and they've even got the corporations all going into this. The corporations are being shaken down. So it's an immense power that he's up against. And I'm not telling anybody to go out there, celebrate, pop champagne bottles. We got this. I'm simply saying that this secret war is very real. Trump has struck some mighty blows. Like if I were like a Las Vegas gambler, or I'm giving you advice, gambling, I would say don't bet your money that we're going to win, because these globalists have been at it for a long time. Like you said, look what they just pulled off. So by no means, and I know, and I believe this is a problem with a lot of the Q followers. You hear them talk like, you know, we got this. And that bothers me. It also, like, kind of hurts the credibility of this thing, because we don't have this. We see what we're up against, this immense power. All I'm saying is that this secret war is real. It's being explained to us through Q. I don't know who's going to win. That's my message.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
And then, Mike, we have one other person who just wanted to ask another question. Are you okay with that at this point?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Okay, Carl Golovin, go ahead.
Mike, hi, Carl Golovin again. The last question just raised in my mind the notion of why not be concerned that the whole QAnon phenomenon, especially since having such a large platform of people to speak to, Q would not point people to World Trade Center 7, AE 9/11 Truth, yeah, all the information that people could use that's readily available. Why not just think of the Q phenomenon, as an intel op, which is functioning to help identify those in the population who are paying attention and interested and potentially would take action on this type of information? It just, one can create an association chart of the tens or hundreds of thousands of people. And just like Snowden seems like a limited hangout sort of thing, where you know, those who follow Snowden are identifiable. So when if things unravel, the population of those who have shown the spark of interest in things are, you know, readily identifiable.
Okay, well, there's a couple of reasons why that theory I don't believe is plausible. Because first of all, it means that Donald Trump is part of it, that he's the ultimate deep stater, that he's even worse than Hillary or worse than Obama, and he's just a fake who's there to bring in the New World Order. And that just makes absolutely no sense, because if he's a globalist agent, he's doing a horrible job. you know, getting us out of the climate accord, that was big for them, and ending all the wars, it doesn't make sense, because again, it is the Trump team, and I am unshakable in that. So if you're telling me that QAnon is some kind of sophisticated op to do something nefarious, that means you're telling me that Trump is a fake agent. And not only do I not believe that because of the actions, but more importantly, if you look at the history of fake opposition moves, they always and only run them when there's such an opposition to themselves that they got to get ahead of the opposition, put their agents in there. I go back to 1952. Robert Taft, a true, solid constitutional conservative, he was going to be the next president, no doubt. There was such an uproar in this country against the Democrats because of the communist penetration, the Korean War, MacArthur being fired and everything. So Taft was in. There's no stopping him. So what did they do? To stop Robert Taft from getting the Republican nomination, they went out and they got a left-wing Democrat, Dwight D. Eisenhower, and they turned him into an overnight Republican, and they stole the nomination from Taft. And he spent 8 years destroying the Republican Party. I did a whole book on that called I Don't Like Ike. Look it up at realhistorychannel.org. But that was the whole point. The opposition was so strong, they had to get one of their own to lead it. This was not the case in 2016. Hillary was in. I mean, they had her, and she would have delivered the death blow to this country. And what would be the point of doing a whole Trump operation if he's, You know what I'm saying? It doesn't make sense. It would have made sense only if there was like an uproar against the Democrats, but there wasn't. She was supposed to win, and, you know, by some miracle, he pulled it off. But had she won, do you have any doubt that it would have been game over by now? You know what I'm saying? So what would be the motive of doing a false op when you've got the closing nail and the final nail in the coffin? They had it. So that's it. I don't believe Trump is a psyop.
Well,
Q is not a psyop.
It is interesting to reflect back. Every year there's a dinner that's hosted by the Jesuits. I forget what it's called, the Smith Dinner or something like that. And the two guests. Yeah, the two guests of honor were Hillary and Trump. So I put the Jesuits, the Superior General, as being close to a guiding hand of globalism as there is. But
did you hear what Trump said to her at that dinner? He humiliated her?
No, actually, you'll have to remind me.
Oh my goodness. He said a lot of things, but the thing he said to me, which I don't think anyone understood what he was talking about, but I knew. He said Hillary once wrote a book called It Takes a Village, and that makes sense because in Haiti she took several villages. And Hillary Clinton Foundation runs a child trafficking operation. This all ties into Epstein and all the satanic perverts and all that. And Trump, I mean, he said it straight up at that dinner to her face. There probably wasn't anybody in the audience who knew what he was talking about. And indeed, there was an occasion where a woman was arrested in Haiti for trafficking children, and Bill Clinton went down there and he got her out. And you can look that up. You can Google it. Bill Clinton, Haiti, woman arrested, something like that. So, and you know, people make too much of, well, you know, Trump years ago, he marched in the Israel parade, and Trump did this and that. Listen, you're kind of part of the system. You're a high profile New York City billionaire. It's impossible to avoid rubbing elbows with these people. It's impossible to avoid doing business with these people. I mean, he gave donations to Chuck Schumer. He gave donations to Hillary Clinton. And people point in that, and they say, oh, aha. You know, you're in the inside of the belly of the beast. That's, you know, I'm not concerned about that. But what I see now, again, this is huge. And I wish somebody would, like, address this. But all the wars have ended. 15,000 troops coming back from Germany. How about that one? I mean, that's incredible. So, you know, just for people who love peace alone. You know, and I detest this idea of murdering people in foreign countries and then sending our guys to get killed. I mean, he ended that. It was how many years of war have we had since Papa Bush the first through Obama?
Do you think Iran is off the table, or is Iran scheduled for spring of 2021?
No. Trump is playing the same game with Iran. There's back channel negotiations going on through Rand Paul. Same game as he played with North Korea and Syria. He talks tough and this and this and that. There's not going to be any war. There's not going to be any war with Iran. There's not going to be any war any place. And believe me, I'll turn on a dime if Trump takes us to war anywhere. But there's not. It's just he does the opposite of what, say, Obama used to do. Obama used to talk peace, peace, peace. They gave him a Nobel Peace Prize. Meanwhile, he's waging war everywhere, proxy wars, Libya, Syria, that's all Obama. Well, Trump is the reverse. He talks war, war, war to conceal the fact that he's making deals and he's pacifying, you know, all these countries. I mean, what happened in Korea, I mean, you know, people don't realize that if North Korea and South Korea ever went to war, China is bound by a mutual defense treaty that it signed in 1964, and the United States is bound to fight with North Korea. So, you know, North Korea versus South Korea is automatically China versus United States. And that Trump went in there and defused that situation. And all of these globalists, all the Democrats, even people in his own party, they're mocking him. They're like, oh, why is he with that dictator, Kim Jong-un? I mean, they mocked him for that. So, you know, people need to look at these actions. He's done really big things that, you know, the Korean War, the ending the global warming treaty, you know. But again,
okay.
Go ahead.
No, thank you, Mike. That's it.
Okay.
Okay, Mike, we now have one last question. Are you up for that?
Yeah, keep them coming.
Okay, great. So we're going to cut. David Rold, go ahead, and then we're no more questions after that. Okay.
Hi, this
David,
is,
go ahead.
Yeah, this is David again. So you're kind of convincing me, but I read that the 15,000 troops from Germany, they didn't come back here. They're going to Poland and the Baltic states and Romania and places that are, like, closer to Russia to threaten Russia. And, you know, there's a big war still going on in Yemen and in the Congo. I think there's still war. So,
I didn't know that about the troops. I stand corrected then. But I still insist that there will be – you will not take us to war.
Okay, well, thank you for speaking tonight. This has been very interesting.
Okay.
Well, okay. Thank you. Yeah, Mike, thank you for joining us, really, and it's a lively conversation, and appreciate it. And, you know, we go on this call to try and broaden our knowledge, and so if we listen to people who think the way we do, we don't always grow, and so that's why we invite all sorts of people from different ideas and walks of life. So thank you for joining us and sharing your views, and I hope you'll come on again sometime. You have a lot of books on other topics that we might like to hear from you on. So,
sure. And in the meantime, have a look at the realhistorychannel.org. There's all kinds of stuff there. You know, I mean, really, what we see going on today, it's just amazing. It's a direct continuation starting in the 1800s, even sooner. So.
Right, and I think we agree on probably 90% of everything that we've talked about tonight. So, yeah. Okay, well, thank you so much. Really appreciate
okay.
it.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Okay, I'm going to take us out of Q&A right now, and how do I do that? Let's see. Okay, so everyone is unmuted except for unless you've muted yourself, and some of you have done that. Are there any announcements or anything else anyone would like to talk about before we pause until next month?
Yes, Barb, about the Lawyers Committee?
Yeah, Barb, go ahead.
Yeah, I'll just let people know I've been in quite a long conversation with Richard Gage before this call, and, of course, you know, being on the board of the Lawyers Committee. What I'd like you to know is what we are planning to do. It is not definitive yet, but I'm going to let you know what we would like to have happen with the Lawyers Committee for the anniversary period. We are talking about having a joint online event, like a Zoom event, the Lawyers Committee and New York City Truth Action Project, TAP, on the 10th of September. Don't know the time yet. We're working with Mike Santangelo on that. So that's number one. But the big one, assuming it happens, and we hope so, is we are looking into holding a actual live venue, physical venue event at the National Press Club in the probably 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern time period on the 11th itself at the National Press Club. And we've invited Richard Gage to Zoom in. He wouldn't be able to be there. But we are looking into having Ted Walter come down from New York City for it, and of course the Lawyers Committee will be announcing our major action, which we expect to file with the U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia in probably around early September through September 6th in that period. There will be a new grand jury petition on the anthrax attacks. So we chose that one as our next grand jury petition very intentionally because of the links to to COVID-19, to the COVID-19 operation. They are both, in our opinion, bioengineered weapons of mass destruction. So I just wanted you to know, I don't know if anybody has any questions. It's not gelled yet. Just at our last board meeting only a week ago today, we decided what we were going to try to do, and of course it still needs to be organized. Mick Harrison, our litigation director, will be one of the speakers at Richard Gage's online event on the second day on Saturday. So any questions? I'm not sure they're answered yet, but if you have any questions.
Yeah, just speak out if you do. There's only 9 of us left on the call, and you're all unmuted unless you've muted yourself. So anyone have a question for Barbara? Go ahead. No, I guess not.
Okay, all right, Barbara. Okay. Thanks for sharing that.
And maybe next month you'll know more details that we could have you on again to share.
We better.
Yeah,
you better.
Go ahead.
John O'Malley.
Yeah, hi, John.
Since it's going to be at the press club, if you can contact us in the DC group and let us know if there's anything that we can do to help. In the past, we've done things like pick up people at the airports, put people up for the night, or whatever. Just let us know, please. Thank you.
Well, yeah, thank you very much for offering that. I will mention that to Dave Meiswinkle and our board. We are working with, or hoping to work with, again, Andrew Krieg, who is a member of the press club and can get about a 15 or 20% discount as a member. Of course, it costs a lot of money, but we can afford it. We just hope that the room is available and that we will be able to do this. But again, we don't know for sure what the events will be, but I will certainly know before the next call. And if I know before the next call, I'll let Craig and Cheryl know too, and just send it to the list.
Thank you. That'd be great.
Yeah,
okay, anyone else?
Yeah, I've got a question.
Go ahead.
This is Lynn in Iowa. Is there any more information on what happened in Cleveland that David Meiswinkle was referring to last time he spoke in San Diego last March?
Remind me, I was at that event as well with David and Chris Goya. I was a speaker also, and I'm not recalling what you're referring to, so just remind me. Remind me, what are you talking about?
About the plane landing, 767 from Boston, landing in Cleveland and going supposedly into the NASA hangar with about 200 people.
Meiswinkle was simply referring to what already been reported. We don't have any further information.
Oh, I thought there was a lady there that contacted them and they were going to follow up on more investigation into that.
That's possible. I don't remember hearing it, but I'll ask him about it.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks for reminding me.
Yeah,
okay,
I'd like
anybody
to know,
go ahead.
I would like on the lawyer's site if everything that, Mick Harrison last time at San Diego had talked about all the details of what the coroner had reported about wanting the judge to give them death certificates before they'd have the DNA.
Mm-hmm.
And all that kind of details, I wish that was all on the lawyer's site of everything that they do know, because he knows a lot of little details, and that means a lot to me or anybody that's been following 9/11 for year after year after year. The details really
right.
make the picture coming clearer.
Right. Well, yeah, I understand that. There are trade-offs. That's not likely to happen until we turn our attention after anthrax to a grand jury petition on Shanksville. We don't like putting out a bit and a piece here and there. We really like to use a hammer and not a nail, you know, or not a small hammer, but a big sledgehammer. And so we like to marshal all of our evidence in a truly compelling document like the grand jury petition in New York City. And when you see it, I just finished a deep edit on the opening large, you know, major section of our anthrax grand jury petition today, in fact, at 5:02, 2 minutes after the call started. And you will be amazingly impressed by it, like you were with the World Trade Center petition. So we will do that, but probably only as part of the evidentiary exhibit of a Pennsylvania attack petition.
Okay.
Okay, anyone else? All right, thank you, Barbara, for sharing all that with us. And are there any other announcements before we pause tonight? No? Okay. Our next meeting is on August 26th, and if anyone has any suggestions for speakers, please let me know. And I would like a little feedback. I mean, this. Did you all like having Mike King on? I know a lot of you didn't agree with him, but I don't know. I enjoyed hearing the perspective. I don't agree with him either on some of that, but it was good to hear what he had to say and know more about QAnon.
Yeah, it was great having him on.
It was good.
Yeah, I thought it was lively.
Okay, so you all like hearing that different perspectives. Okay.
I thought it was very educational. I don't think it was really 9/11 related. But, you know, he's I don't know if people know. People need to go to his website. At least Tomato Bubble, which he had until he renamed it, I think like within only the past year. I don't know how I got on his list, but for years I've received his weekly or sometimes more often posts at Tomato Bubble, and now his new one, the Real History Channel or whatever. And his bottom line for years has been he's just a pro-Hitler historian. And I think people need to know that. You need to go see it for yourself.
Okay, that might be important to do. Okay, all right. But overall, you all kind of like people who may not think the way most of us think. You like hearing that and debating that. So that's what I'm getting out of that. Yes.
It gives us an opportunity to challenge them a bit, also, so that we learn from each other. I think it's fantastic.
Right. Right. Okay. Great. Any suggestions for speakers for next month? If you think of any between now and the next couple of weeks, email Craig or I, and we'll hopefully could get them.
Yes. Yeah, so I had an idea. I'd like somebody who could address the question of whether the SARS-CoV-2 virus really exists or not.
David, I had trouble hearing that. Could you say that again?
I would like somebody on who could address the question of whether the SARS-CoV-2 virus really exists or not, and whether the PCR test is really testing for something. I don't know.
Yeah. Do you have anybody in mind who could answer that?
I mean,
Xander. Well, I do. I do. Problem. Beverly Rubick, Dr. Beverly Rubick.
Beverly Rubick. Okay. Do you have her contact information, Barb?
Absolutely. I've known her for 40 years. She's a PhD and an expert in all of this, and she's been on radio a lot.
Oh, yeah, great. All right. So would you send that to me?
Absolutely. Email that to me? Right after the call, yeah.
Oh, thank you. Great. Okay. Did you have anyone else in mind, David?
Well, I thought of asking Xander, who is on the call now, about it after he finished speaking like a couple months ago. So I'm wondering if he could address that. Or there's Dr. Andrew Kaufman and various people, you know.
Andrew Kaufman, yeah, he might be a good one to get. Okay.
Yeah.
And Xander, I don't know. Xander, what do you think about that? Are you?
Kaufman, I'll go at him. I'm not aggressively, but I just totally disagree with his premise that it's
I'm having trouble hearing you. Could you say that again?
Yeah, Kaufman could be interesting. I mean, he's going to tell us that viruses don't exist and that they're lysosomes, I think, is what the premise is. It's an interesting discussion. I'm not a fan of that belief system, but I'm happy.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
David, you know, jump on Google Scholar and just tailor your search results to even before this whole pandemic thing, and just start looking at genomic sequences of the SARS viruses,
And you'll learn a bit about how scientists from around the world with no agendas whatsoever catalog, sequence, and understand these things at a genetic level.
Everything I've read is that they haven't actually, like, isolated and purified the virus, so we don't know what the PCR test is testing for.
That's not accurate. They have. Again, jump on Google Scholar. It's a pretty good way to get unbiased academic.
So, Xander, I had heard also that, you know, the coronavirus has been around for decades in the common cold. So the test can't separate out whether it's that common cold coronavirus or the COVID-19. Do you know if that's accurate?
I don't know about the specificity of the PCR test, so I don't know that. But I understand that SARS-CoV-2 is one variant of coronavirus.
So anyway, I'd like people who could have a good discussion about that next month.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. So we have the Beverly Rubik and maybe Andrew Kaufman and possibly someone else. So, David, if you want to do a little research on who might be able to talk about that and email me, that would be great, and I'll do the same.
Okay, I'll try to do that. Thanks.
Okay, great.
Cheryl, I'd just like to ask everybody who's still on the call, maybe, you know, nine or so, has anybody not seen or watch the really fantastic, almost four-hour webinar that Kevin Barrett put on with No Lies Radio, I think it was the end of May. Fantastic, with world-famous microbiologist Dr. Francis Boyle, Dr. Meryl Nass, who is one of the world's experts on anthrax, and Barry Kitson, a number of others. And if you haven't, what I'd like to do is, for anybody who hasn't, if you haven't already posted on the minutes for any of these calls, because I know I wasn't on the last couple, because they usually happen during our exact time of our lawyers committee board meetings or committee meetings that I'm on. But today is an exception. That's why I'm on. But if you haven't already posted the link, I'd like you to be able to post it in the minutes because it's really important for people to watch if we're going to have this topic next time.
Well, I watched that, and I didn't like it at all because they went along with the propaganda of saying that the virus is very deadly and is killing 5 or 10% of the infected people, and that's just not true. So I found it to be like going along with the story and the fear-mongering.
Well, not everybody said that. People have different opinions. I think the whole thrust of the webinar, for those who would like to watch it, are the parallels between 9/11, the 9/11 operation, and the COVID-19 coronavirus operation.
And we had Andrew Craig speak on the call last, I don't know what, 2 months ago, maybe before that, just before that was happening, the Wednesday before that. So he talked to us about what he would be talking about. So we're a little bit familiar with that.
But Andrew Craig was not on the webinar.
Not Andrew Craig, I'm sorry. Tom Wilkett.
Oh, Tom Wilkett, yeah. Tom Wilkett,
yeah.
So anyway, the bottom line, the reason to watch it is its whole purpose was the parallels between especially the anthrax attacks related to 9/11 and the COVID-19 operation. So it's directly related to the topic of this call.
Okay, thank you, Barbara, for that suggestion. And for yours, David, on the speaker. And any other thoughts or comments?
Cheryl, I don't know that he would be available, but Don Rappaport from morefakenews.com would, of course, be a great speaker on all COVID-related questions.
Do you have his contact information?
Well, I did track down a possible contact information. Of course, at his website, there are links to send messages, but primarily related to purchasing his informational product. I will forward you what I have.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, and I'll go to his website too and see what I can find. But okay,
very good.
I think that would be a great idea. Great idea. Yeah.
Okay, so maybe we could have that Beverly Rubik and John Rappaport would be the choices. So we can get both of them.
Yeah.
Okay. Excellent. All right. Well, so everybody hang in there, and we'll see you all the next month, hopefully.
Very good.
Yep.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. Bye-bye.
Real good.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye.